we're back. Troy Harmon with Hensler Financial, also here with Casey Smith and Jarrett McKenzie. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, we answer questions. We answer financial questions on this show. And we just rolled out something new. I think we talked about it last time I was on, at least. This week we actually have a question in this manner. So let me explain the service. If you would like to have your question put on the air, you can give us a call at 1-855-429-9166. You leave your question on our voicemail. We take that voicemail. If you ooh and on like I do, you're probably going to get it cleaned up a little bit. And then we'll replay your question and answer it on Money Talks next week. You can always email us as well, drgene@hensler.com. Hensler is spelled H-E-N-S-S-L-E-R.com. But if you're in your car or, you know, don't want to bother with the email, give a question, give a call to that 1-855-429-9166. Leave your question, and we will play it. So we actually have one this week. And, guys, if y'all are ready for this, here we go. Got Ginger, opinions on HSAs.
Hi, my name's Ginger. I wanted to go ahead and get your opinion on HSAs. I'm covered by a high deductible plan at work, and we have an option to put money in a flex spending account, but it's not mandatory for our insurance. And from what I can tell, I'm eligible to open an HSA. So I wanted to kind of get your opinions on that. Thanks so much.
So there you have it. Question for our financial planner.
Absolutely, and thanks to Ginger for calling in and leaving that question.
Absolutely.
That's actually a very good question. You know, Jarrett, what do you think about that?
Yeah, the HSAs in general, I mean, clearly are an option in some of the health plans through your employer. Not all are eligible for an HSA, but some are. And generally, the way that I view them is, you know, if you have consistently, you say regular year-to-year expenses, medical expenses, that is, and you can plan for there being those continued expenses, then if you're eligible for one of these, I would say it's certainly worthwhile to contribute, but specifically for that purpose. I know some of these plans have an option to invest the money that is within the HSA, and so if that's any of your intent, I would say there's a better vehicle in order to accomplish that with the other types of retirement accounts and so forth. But with regard to the HSA itself, I mean, that should, in my mind, relate specifically to the medical expenses. And again, it's certainly worthwhile if you're eligible to contribute to one so that you can get the benefit of having that account when you also have medical expenses.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the HSA is a good option.
You guys are throwing this HSA around. What does that stand for?
I'm sorry. Health savings account.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I had to play the guy that bought the Harambe Cheeto.
Right, exactly.
Well, Ginger clearly knows what it is, but you're right. The audience may not be as familiar with it, and so maybe that's a good place to.
Yeah, we should have started with that, but thanks for straightening this out there.
All right, thank you. You're good.
We, as Jarrett was saying, there are some benefits to the HSA, which is, the money that you put into the plan, into the HSA account, can grow tax deferred like an IRA, and it's actually tax-free if you use the funds to pay for qualified medical expenses.
Right.
So it's sort of like a 529 plan for education. It's just the health savings version of that.
Right. And you have to buy a special insurance plan as well, right?
In order to qualify, you have to be covered under what they call a high deductible health plan.
Right.
Now, high deductible is a relative term. I think most of us would consider the limits pretty low.
Achievable.
Achievable. The annual deductible to qualify for a high deductible plan is at least $1,300 for individual and $2,600 for family coverage. So those are not, you know, outrageously high. I would think that that's a pretty reasonable level of deductible to be able to qualify for the plan. But in terms of whether or not you should contribute to it, I mean, I think it is a good option. To Jarrett's point, you should think of it sort of like a 529. We wouldn't necessarily recommend putting money in there unless you expect to use it for medical expenses, because there might be a better vehicle for it.
Well, and what the hope is in having the HSA is that you're not taking after-tax dollars, ones in which you've already paid tax on, and then using those unexpectedly to have to pay for medical expense. Again, if you, let's say, you know, you and your wife or you and your husband are planning for a child or something like that, and you know there are ones coming up, if your plan is eligible for an HSA and you can foresee medical expenses, don't not participate in those plans and then allow yourself to use after-tax dollars towards medical expenses when you could have gotten the benefit that Casey mentioned earlier of using tax-deferred dollars or non-taxed dollars towards that same thing.
Yeah, if you can get a discount on your medical expenses just by using tax, you know, using taking advantage of this type of plan and using those tax pre-tax dollars, then that's going to be a, I mean, it's a savings to you. You save, you know, depending on what your marginal bracket is, you know, 25 to maybe 50 cents on the dollar, depending on if you're in the highest bracket.
Ginger, I would say this. If you're eligible, certainly do that. If you think you're going to have some medical expenses, it would be to your benefit to do so. Just make sure you're eligible and keep an eye on those medical expenses.
Guys, we have a question from our long-term listener, good friend, Bill Murray. He says, for well over a decade, the Vanguard Healthcare Funds have outpaced the S&P 500, and they're not alone. Just about anything in healthcare has done quite well for a little while. Do you think that will continue? Which would you prefer for the next 5 years, the Vanguard Health Index or the Vanguard Managed Healthcare Fund? Under President Trump, the drug producers might be pressured to lower prices, while hospitals might see increased prosperity. Is it time for a managed fund? Or will there be little difference in the long run? Well, to be honest with you, Bill, there's been really little difference between the two types that you talked about for quite some time. In fact, if you look back around mid-2012 is where we started seeing the outperformance of the healthcare sector, and it coincides with when the Supreme Court actually said it was legal for us to have the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you care to call it. If you look over the last 10 years, the returns on both of those funds are slightly over 10%. VGHAX, which is the managed healthcare fund, is up about 10.5%. The S&P over the same time period is about 7%. So absolutely, they have outperformed. A huge portion of that is because of regulation that forced people on the rolls of healthcare. You saw an increase in revenues. You're going to see an increase in earnings. I and Dr. Gene talked about this a good bit back when that was going on.
Right.
You know, he said that he would avoid it because sooner or later the profit's going to be squeezed out of these companies. And I agree with you. That's probably what's going on. As we go forward, especially with the pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest with you, I think it's really more of a secular thing. So in rebuilding Obamacare to make it whatever you want to call it, Trump care, Republican care, I don't care. How about that? Anyway, what I really think you might see is fewer people on the healthcare rolls, at the same time that they're trying to squeeze some profit out of the system. So if you ask me, I'm saying that I don't know that I would overweight healthcare at this moment anyway. And, you know, this kind of launches into one of those situations. We've got, you know, you're using a sector, kind of a passive strategy to get exposure to an area that that you believe is going to outperform. There's a whole lot of work out there right now that would tell you that passive strategies are better. They leave it kind of half-baked, though.
Mm-hmm.
What they're saying is there is no selection within the sector. They're just going to buy everything at a certain weight that somebody has created an index to look at.
Right.
In the end, the thing that that we're talking about right now is the fact that, well, should you even be overexposed to that space? So while they do away with the selection piece of it, where nobody cares which of the individual stocks you own, the weighting or the allocation in your portfolio is still very active.
Yeah.
So if you ask me, it's very hard. In fact, I think it's impossible to have an investment portfolio without some active decision-making, no matter what you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then the situation that you're describing is, you know, you wouldn't want to just own a healthcare fund, whether that be an actively managed portfolio of healthcare only healthcare stocks or a passively managed strategy where you're following an index.
Right. You don't get diversified.
You don't get any kind of diversification.
Right.
And so if healthcare does decline, yes, it's outperformed over the past decade, but that's nothing to say that that's going to continue. So you need to have some diversification regardless. And you know, while we're kind of on that topic, I guess that you know begs the question of as Troy alluded to, there is a lot in the media these days, especially since we've been in basically an up market since 2009.
Right.
You know, is an actively managed strategy actually better than a passive strategy?
Right.
And, you know, it's a valid question, especially in an up market. It's harder to justify an actively managed strategy if you're just looking at pure return.
Right.
You know, what is the return relative to an index? I mean, obviously, if you're in a passive strategy, you're going to get the index return.
Right.
And an actively managed strategy, one of the benefits, in our opinion, of an actively managed strategy is that you're not only managing to try to achieve a rate of return that's acceptable or needed to meet your financial needs, but it's also managing the risk of that.
Absolutely.
Of that return. And how much risk do you actually have to take to go out and achieve the return that you're hoping to get?
Exactly. Right.
If you ever hear somebody talk about beta in their portfolio, what they're talking about is how their portfolio returns act relative to the S&P 500 or the market. And when you have a beta of one, then it's going to act exactly like it. This is more or less a passive strategy, right? So what you see more often than not with an active strategy is a beta that's less than one, meaning, yes, as the market goes up, you're going to go up less. If the market, say in our case, you know, a beta of 0.9, if the market's up 1%, we would be up 0.9% on a given day. But that's
where
you're
showing. That works on the reverse of that as well.
Absolutely. Right. So a beta of 0.9, to your point, Casey, is absolutely actively managing the risk. Now, like you said, on the downside, market goes down 1%. Active management generally tends to outperform when the market is getting volatile and starting to sell off. And, I mean, how many studies do we have to see? Human beings are risk-averse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you're risk-averse, you want to make sure that you're, you know, generally what they'll do is they couch a question in two different ways. The return on average, the weighted average return of the two different strategies would be the same. The one that has the potential for the biggest loss, human beings generally avoid.
Yeah.
Except in this case.
Right.
Well,
and if you think about it, I mean, over a long period of time, you should end up better off pursuing a strategy where you're taking a little bit less risk. Just because if you think about how that works mechanically, and the analogy we always use for clients is that think about if you've got $100 and you lose 50%, you've lost $50. You got to make 100% to get back to where you started.
Double your money.
Absolutely. You got to double your money.
Right.
If you only lost half of that, if you lost 25%, you would have lost $25. You only have to make 33% to get back to where you started.
Yeah.
So the fact that you're not having to play as much catch up over a long period of time, if you assume that there are market declines, which we have to assume that there will be.
History has shown us that we have quite a few market.
It allows you to get back to making money faster, right? I mean,
Instead
of trying to play catch up and just make up for what you lost, now you can get back to actually making something. And so to that point, I would say to Bill Murray, look, the managed healthcare fund, assuming there is some active management to, you know, what we're talking about here, that to me would seem like a better option. If you're saying, is the Vanguard Health Index or the Vanguard Managed Healthcare Fund be a better option? To us, the management would be a better option because there is going to be some of this risk adjustment accounted for, presumably, in that actively managed fund versus the passive managed fund. And while the passively managed fund may seem, or the index fund in this case, may seem like it's not quite as risky. To some degree, it is. I mean, if you think about it, as the stock price for a company rises, its market cap also rises, which means its weighting in the index is going to rise with it.
Yeah, if you think about how an index works, most of these indices.
Wow, good word.
All right. Got my SAT hat on. Yeah,
that's right.
I thought you looked different.
Yeah, that's right. Most of these indices, are, like the S&P 500, for example, is market cap weighted. What does that mean? It means that, you know, market capitalization is just the stock price times the number of shares outstanding. So as the price goes up, you know, and the number of shares outstanding doesn't change, the weighting of that stock in the index is going to be greater.
Right.
So if you're following a passive strategy and buying that index, then the manager of that index fund has to buy more of the company that is increasing in market cap. So sure. think of Apple in the S&P 500. It's like 4% roughly of the S&P. Every time Apple goes up in price, the managers of that index fund have to go out and buy more Apple. Well, in theory, they're buying it when it's at a higher value. It's much more expensive relative to the companies that are maybe cheaper relative to their, you know, whatever ratio you want to compare them
right.
to. So you're effectively doing the opposite of what you should be doing, which is, you know, you're buying high and selling low.
Right, the opposite.
Versus what you should be doing, which is buying low and selling high.
Right. There's other issues, too. We at Hensler Financial actually prefer to go with high-quality companies.
Yep.
If you look at the S&P 500, it's made up of a little bit of good, a little bit of not so good. The way that we determine what's high quality, actually, we look at the level of debt that's taken on by a company, the predictability of earnings, backing up to that debt question, you know, is it a debt, even if it's high, is it a debt that their earnings have proven can be serviced, you know, with ease. So what we try to do is avoid financial destruction in the form of bankruptcy. We try to always avoid that. Obviously, you know, that doesn't happen overnight. But when you buy the index as a whole, you're buying the good and the bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another one of those things as an active manager we actually try to deal with. All right, guys, we're going to take a real quick break. We'll be right back with some more listener questions. Stick around. You're listening to Money Talks.
All material presented is compiled from sources believed to be reliable and current, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. The contents are intended for general information purposes only. Information provided should not be the sole basis in making any decisions and is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified professional, such as a tax consultant, insurance advisor, or attorney. Although this material is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with respect to the subject matter, it may not apply in all situations. This is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments. It is not our intention to state, indicate, or imply in any manner that current or past results are indicative of future profitability or expectations. Portfolio holdings discussed are subject to change. There is no guarantee that in the future these securities will be held in Hensler accounts. As with all investments, there are associated inherent risks. Please obtain and review all financial material carefully before investing. Hensler is not licensed to offer or sell insurance products. This overview is not to be construed as an offer to purchase any insurance products.